You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning. Over the weekend, federal authorities charged a 23-year-old Nigerian man with attempting to blow up a Detroit-bound airliner on Christmas Day. That man, Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, says he got the chemicals from a bomb expert that had ties to Al-Qaeda. We're joined again by Ahmed Idris, BBC reporter from Abuja, Nigeria, and we can get a little bit more details about Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab. You've spoken with his family. What are they saying about the incident?
By the way, the family issued a statement this morning, which is the first official statement from the family on this case, where they said from very early childhood, Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab got the best parental monitoring they could ever give. And he had never shown any attitude, conduct or association that would give concern to them or any other person, except the fact that when Umar Farouk reported to them that he was abandoning his master's degree program in Dubai to go to Yemen for 7 years of Arabic study, that was when they started, when the alarm bell started ringing in their heads. And immediately the father reported to the U.S. Embassy in Nigeria, the Nigerian intelligence community, and the Saudi Arabian authorities.
Clearly, there must have been something going on that made them suspect that perhaps his, by all reports, very strict religious views had become perhaps excessive, that made them call the U.S. Embassy when he said he was going to Yemen.
Exactly. Umar, at one point, while in Yemen, before he went to Yemen, and while there, he told them that, look, I don't need your money to pursue my education in Yemen because the education is free. And the father asked him, if you're going to stay in Yemen for 7 years, by then I'm sure your passport must have expired. Then he told the father that, look, even if the passport expired, I'm definitely going to get a Yemeni passport and I can live with it.
Okay.
And he wanted them to cut ties with him.
Huh. That's Ahmed Idris, BBC reporter from joins us from Abuja, Nigeria. We're also joined by Scott Shane, Washington reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
So at that point, when his father spoke with the U.S. Embassy, walk us through what happened after that. Umar's father phoned the American Embassy in Abuja in October.
Yes, exactly. In October, he calls and expresses, I'm told, three things. That his son, he believes, has been radicalized, that he may have been in Yemen or he may be in Yemen, and that, in fact, he's missing. They don't know exactly where he is, and they have concerns about him. And this is sort of an extraordinary thing, to take concerns like this outside the family and to the United States Embassy. What they did was they shared the information within the embassy, where there are representatives of FBI, CIA, Department of Homeland Security, and so on. Then they passed the information on to Washington, where it went into a very large database of 500,000 people who have popped up in one way or another with some suspicious ties or connections, but nothing really solid. And it did not go from that database of 500,000 people to the much smaller databases that require extra screening on flights, or the 4,000 people who are on the no-fly list. They explain that in part because, obviously, one phone call with no corroborating evidence from any other source and from a family member, it can be something quite alarming, but it also can be, a family dispute or a grudge or rumor or gossip, and they don't want to necessarily interfere with someone's life by preventing them from traveling based on one phone call. So what they had done was actually mark this gentleman's file so that if he ever applied for a visa again, they said, let's do a full investigation. But they didn't pull his existing visa, which allowed him to travel the United States through June of 2010.
How does this differ from the story of the five Muslims from suburban Virginia who, in fact, there was a large investigation, and they were followed into Pakistan? Was there something different from what Umar's father told the U.S. Embassy and what the families of those five men told American authorities that made them take more notice of the five men from Virginia?
Well, I think in that case, the fact that these five were Americans and that they had all disappeared together, that indicated some kind of coordinated plot or scheme. In this case, and again, they were Americans, so they could travel freely back in the United States. In this case, you had a guy who was Nigerian, and no one knew where he was. That, you know, there was no reason to believe, there was no evidence that he was in the United States at that point, and of course he wasn't. So we sort of, with hindsight, we look back at this and focus on this one case. Of course, you know, you have to think about how many calls were made to U.S. embassies around the world by family members expressing concern about one person in their family, and of course, so this goes a little bit into the pile of business to think about maybe down the road if more information comes up.
Ahmed Idris from Abuja, Nigeria, can you tell us a little bit about people who may have known him from his master's degree program in Dubai? Have we learned anything about what transformed him to make him want to leave that program and go to Yemen for, I guess, reportedly, Al-Qaeda training?
Well, nothing much. However, I think the issue started when he started his Arabic program in London. This is not confirmed yet, but again, when he started telling his parents that he wanted to leave for an Arab country to pursue an Arabic education, and the parents thought the ideal thing is to take him to Dubai, which is absolutely not on terrorism calendar or whatever. But then they felt that Dubai, being a cosmopolitan city or a country, they feel Umar can get the best education there for his business management, and then again acquire some Arabic as well. But then he said, towards the end of that course, he said, I'm no longer interested in this course. I'm going to Yemen, and I'm going there for 7 years. I think probably if there is some radicalization, it must have started earlier before he left for Yemen.
Okay, that's Ahmed Idris, a BBC reporter, joining us from Abuja, Nigeria. Last question for you, Scott. What happens now? He has left the hospital. Where does he go?
Well, he's gone to a prison, and, you know, this is a criminal case, and he has a lawyer now, and he'll prepare for trial down the road. And the larger picture of what happens is that President Obama has, of course, now ordered a review of both the physical screening at checkpoints and the watch listing to understand what went wrong here and whether this kind of episode could be prevented in the future.
Well, the Richard Reid, the shoe bomber, made us all now remove our shoes. We'll have to wonder what is going to change in the security lines in light of this particular one. Thanks. Scott Shane is a reporter with our partner, The New York Times.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.